All right, this is the second interview with Lori Steckervetz, and I did it right this time. Mm-hmm. This is for our LGBTQ oral history project. It has a longer name, but I'm not going to say it. It's April 3rd, 2014. I'm Troy Reeve with the UW-Mass Oral History Program. So, Lori, thanks for agreeing to meet with me.
Yep.
We just went over sort of the overview of what I want to talk about. First, I noticed from your resume that after you graduated with your BA or BS,
yes,
that you worked for a bit for the Nelson Institute as a research tech. So, first off, how did you get that job?
While I was in my undergraduate degree, I cultivated a relationship with Dr. Nancy Matthews, who was in the, at the time, it was called the Wildlife Department of Wildlife Ecology. It has since changed names, and she has since moved on. She actually transferred to the Nelson Institute, and she was a bit of a mentor to me. She wasn't my formal advisor, but there was very few women in, well, she was the only woman in the Wildlife Ecology Department, and in ecology and environmental sciences, there weren't a lot of women faculty. So at the time, I was seriously entertaining an the idea of pursuing a PhD in conservation biology. And she took me under her wing as basically a mentor. So when I graduated in December 2004, I kind of was floundering a little bit, looking, trying to find a job that could keep me in the general area because I had a life and a partner at the time, and that I could afford to live on, and a bachelor's degree in wildlife ecology. The assumption is that you're going to go on and get your master's, and the jobs are typically go live in Montana for 6 months and we won't pay you, but we'll give you a place to live. So I somehow, I'm not exactly sure if I remember exactly how it happened, but I was able to have a conversation with her where she was basically said, I really need interns. Do you want to go out to southwestern Wisconsin and live in a field house and get paid a fairly decent wage and go collect data for me? So I did that for 2 field seasons.
Where exactly at in southwestern
Wisconsin? Between Arena and Barneveld. Okay. There was about 100 white-tailed deer with radio collars on them, and I spent 2 springs and summers driving around with radio telemetry equipment, listening for deer to figure out where they were positioned on the landscape.
Not a bad way to spend your
time. No. It's a nice area. Mm-hmm. Drive around.
And was it that experience you think helped you get a job at DNR?
That's one of the things. The other thing, which wasn't actually highlighted too much on my resume, I actually came back here. I've been a student here several times. I came back to the UW. Essentially, what had happened, I guess I should back up a little bit here. I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. I was looking for full-time employment, and then my father became seriously ill in between the stints of my doing this research for Nancy, and he actually developed stage 4 pancreatic cancer. So in between the 2 stints, I actually went back to Pennsylvania for a year and lived at home. My father did subsequently pass away from it about 11 months after his diagnosis. And it was at that time that I wasn't really sure what to do with myself. I felt very lost. And I think being a student, being in school, is something that has always been very familiar. It took me almost 10 years to get my undergrad, so it just made sense for me to come back and take some classes to try to reorient myself. So I took some classes towards the Geographical Information Systems certificate. And I think the combination of my research experience with Nancy and those classes, I was able to get the position at the DNR. I actually didn't finish the certificate because I got a job at the DNR.
Okay. Feel free to answer this as much mm-hmm. or as little as you want, but so you go back to Pennsylvania?
Yeah, for about 9 months.
From what I remember of our first conversation, you know, being a lesbian in that part of Pennsylvania was not the most pleasant thing in your life.
Yeah.
How was it in 2005?
So I guess at that point I had been out in the Midwest I moved in 99. So going back in 2005, it was in the back of my mind. My trips to Pennsylvania in between had been, you know, a week, 2 weeks, primarily visiting family and friends, really not focused on my identity and how that fit in the climate there. I didn't really even think about it because I was always too busy. Just the time I would be back would be so short and the family obligations and whatnot didn't really leave time for it. Other than the fact that occasionally when I was in a relationship with somebody, if they came with me, I sometimes would still feel a little uncomfortable if we were out in public and if we were holding hands or something. When I came back to Pennsylvania in 2005, I was also in the middle of a breakup from a long-term relationship. We had been together for about 7 years. At that point, we were together probably maybe five. So I had that going on. So I came back to Pennsylvania not really thinking about it. I was very focused on the fact that my father was just diagnosed with this illness, and we didn't know how long he had when he was first diagnosed. It was initially really, really bad in the sense of, it was always very bad, but we thought it was a matter of weeks. So once it seemed like we had some better information on his state and that it wasn't a matter of weeks, that he had the potential of fighting it and we didn't know how much time he had, I started thinking, well, maybe I should try to find a job here and stay, since I felt like my personal life was in utter chaos and it was easier just for me to focus on helping my family out. And that's when I started kind of paying more attention. I needed to find a job just really quick to make some money, and I didn't want to be in the closet again. So I decided to find a job and got a job at Borders Bookstore. Mm-hmm. And at the time in Lancaster, that was a known, very progressive hangout type of place. And when I got a job there, I realized that there were several people working there who were out. And it was interesting getting to know my hometown again over the course of the time I was there from a new perspective, because these were people who were out, who had chosen to stay in Lancaster. And this is about 2005, 2006. And I think what I was actually witnessing, now that I go back to Lancaster visiting, is that was kind of the beginning of a shift culturally in the area. There were more and more young people choosing to stay in the city. There was signs of gentrification occurring in certain neighborhoods, and it was predominantly driven by young, I would characterize them as artistic and more identified as either gay or, you know, sexual orientation is ambiguous. And they were choosing to stay in Lancaster. So the culture in Lancaster was starting to change too, which was really refreshing and made that time a lot easier. I actually even went out on a few dates when I was there. So it was really surprising. And I felt suddenly much more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I haven't felt uncomfortable there since then. Like, it's only gotten more and more open and kind of more cosmopolitan.
So your father's illness might have had a silver lining, at least for your being able to see your hometown in a different way.
Yeah, it was unexpected. And definitely at least for one aspect of my life at a very chaotic time, provided a sense of relief.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We might at some point talk more about your work mm-hmm. for the DNR, because sure. that's, you know, a good chunk of your time here, mm-hmm. but it's not really sort of the primary reason
right.
why we're interviewing you. So we talked a little bit the last time about why librarianship. So let's talk about actually starting to get into the program
sure.
and what you thought about it. So when you entered the program, did you have a vision when you started as to what type of librarian you would be?
No. I came into the program knowing that I had a background, a base of knowledge, and a skill set that might have been not unusual, but not as common for the typical library student. I knew that my science background set me apart and may have provided different opportunities for me. And I got this information kind of twofold. The relationship that I referenced previously, the 7-year relationship, she is a graduate of SLIS, and we've remained friends, actually, and have been, I would say she was a large part of encouraging me to consider SLIS as an option. It was at a point in my life where I had realized I didn't want to pursue a PhD in conservation biology. That just wasn't the right path for me. Every time I thought about going back to school for some sort of master's or PhD, I wouldn't be able to make myself do it. So the more I thought about librarianship, I had remembered my time in the GIS classes, talking to the librarian at the map library and the geography library, and realizing that the skill set that I had at my job at the DNR was a lot about information management, a lot about data management. And I never had really seen that as its own career path. So in those conversations, it started basically coming up as like, oh, this might be something interesting to do. And the more I started looking at it and looking at the type of jobs out there, I could envision myself going into academic librarianship and working at a science-focused library. I could envision myself working in a corporate library for like a pharmaceutical company. I could envision myself in a government library working with some sort of science-based data. So that was basically what I had in my mind when I came into the program, was I'm interested in any of these. I really wanted to keep my science background in the forefront as something that would be useful for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I want to talk about classes, but what's on my mind right now is the sort of the social aspect
mm-hmm.
of graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So, what avenues were presented in terms of getting to know your cohort, and then so what sort of sanctioned aspects, and then were there things that your cohort did or other graduate students did to sort of help also with the to bring you together socially?
When just even thinking right at orientation, I was interested in a number of the student organizations. I think being I'm somewhere in the middle of the field, but I'm definitely older than most of the people in my cohort. And being in a relationship and having basically a life here in Madison, I was interested in obviously meeting people and hoping to establish some good friendships and having a social life within SLIS. But I was really interested in cultivating the relationships that I thought would be, I don't want this to sound like I'm using people, but be advantageous for me in terms of my career. Mm-hmm. So the social, for me, the emphasis on social activities was, am I working in a student org that I'm learning a new skill set to at the same time? Mm-hmm. That was really my focus, because in my mind, I already had a, I guess you would say, a life here in Madison, right, as it were, right, and a social circle.
And I think we talked about that either on the record or off the record. Mm-hmm. But from what I'm hearing, graduate school for you was the opportunity to, you know, get a degree and get,
yes,
a career.
Yes.
And the other aspects that people sometimes associate with school in general, the social aspects, were secondary.
Yes. Yes. I would say that's accurate.
So, and you said you were sort of on the high end in terms of age of your cohort.
Yeah, I actually expected to be average. You know, coming back after having another career for 7+ years, and I expected to be the average. I was really surprised when I started in 2011 that it seemed like a lot of people had just left undergrad, and I, not only had I been out of undergrad for a period of time, but because it took me so long to get my undergrad, here I am in my mid going into late 30s thinking most of the students in my program would be around the same age. So it was a little surprising to me that I started realizing right at orientation that most of the people I was talking to were under 30 and maybe just right out of undergrad, which that was really surprising for me.
And not to necessarily get into specifics of, mm-hmm, the cohort, but do you see their experience as being different than yours?
Yes.
Are there ways you can elaborate on that?
Let me think here. I think for me the most obvious was that social aspect of, there were students who were really, and this totally makes sense, they either just moved here from someplace else, they're not from Madison, so they're in the process of getting to learn about a new geographic area. They don't know a lot of people. And whether they were single or in relationships, but I would say they're still all very young, much younger than me. There was a large component of the, you know, let's go out to the bars, which I'm fine with, but that seemed to be kind of like a lot of like late night social gathering type stuff that I would have done when I was their age, and I simply just didn't. And I could feel that kind of causing a gap between me and students who were of that group. We just don't have as much in common in our personal lives.
And I think that's totally, I think, to be expected.
Yes.
And really nothing, I mean, it's nothing against where they're at.
Oh, no, not at all.
When you're in community, in this case, sort of a collegial, mm-hmm, obviously academic community with people who are sometimes a third of a generation younger than you, there's going to be differences.
Absolutely.
And connections may just not be, they'll be made in other ways.
Right, right.
From what I know of SLIS, I assume you felt comfortable in your skin there.
Yes. It's a, actually, I would even say more so than other academic departments. It's hard for me to, I've been thinking about this a lot since we talked about this a little bit, I think the first portion of the interview, but it's not that in my other lives here, in other departments, whether it was for my bachelor's degree or my time with the GIS certificate, it was never an issue of not feeling like I was unwelcomed because of my identity, but there's no space for even, especially in my bachelor degree program, there was no space for that to be even talked about, really. So it's not that it wasn't welcomed, but it wasn't that I couldn't be out, but it just wasn't something I ever really talked about very much. I don't know if it has something to do with the sciences. It's such a focus on other things that like people's personal lives or I don't know what it is, but when I started at SLIS, there was just, has always been this very much openness and, maybe because there's a component of SLIS that's more focused on like a social sciences aspect that, and there's an idea in librarianship on social justice that creates a space and an expectation that this isn't about inclusivity. But I felt that right away. And I felt that it was always, there was always a space to be able to talk about those things and think about those things and put myself personally into that context. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but it does. And I'm wondering, is that in all cases in SLIS, meaning, you know, small groups, the committees that you're on, the classes that you feel comfortable in, if something comes up where you feel looking at it through the lens of sexuality or gender or identity would provide additional information or possibly a new perspective, you feel comfortable in sharing that?
Yeah, I feel like I'm thinking about classes and even if it didn't, you know, explicitly come up, there was lots of different places where I feel like talking about either being aware of the patron group that you're serving or access to information, that there was this general idea of the profession makes it a point. And that was, you know, expressed by instructors of this is important to librarianship, whether you're talking about racial issues or sexual orientation or whatever. All those things I felt like instructors made a point of trying to ensure that students were aware that you should be aware of these things. Mm-hmm.
This may be as much as a comment as a question. Mm-hmm. It just seems that librarians, you think of a stereotypical librarian, and it's not what a librarian is. It seems librarians are always on the forefront of protecting rights and protecting access, and just sort of trying to be open and inclusive.
Yes, I felt like that was not something I really thought about when I started the program, because I came in with this like, I have a science background, I want to find something I use the sciences, and I was very, very focused on that, and it actually kind of took me by surprise because I hadn't been involved really in much like activism or advocacy work until I did very early on in my undergraduate career before I came to Wisconsin. And that was in part of my coming out process. I think it was necessary for me to surround myself with people who had gone through that and then subsequently learn to advocate for myself by being with a group that was about advocacy. But when I came here and went back to school, other than one semester really, two semesters of volunteering with the LGBT Campus Center as a mentor, I didn't do anything that on this campus other than go to a 10% society dance here or there. I didn't do anything that was like LGBT advocacy related or any type of social justice type work. I was just very focused on my classes and anything dealing with that aspect of my life. If I did anything, it was outside of the campus environment. But when I came back here, it was not on my mind. And then I was approached by a classmate about starting an LGBT-focused student organization for SLIS. And all of a sudden I was thinking about all these things again, which was very, it's been very surprising, but also really rewarding.
Thank you. Maybe since you brought that up, let's talk a little bit about the group.
Sure.
Who approached you? How did it start? And then sort of its very brief history, because it really hasn't been around that long.
So this would have been fall of 2011. So right when I started at SLIS, and one of my classmates, Carrie Wolfson, who since graduated from the program, she approached me and another fellow classmate, Jen Kermer, and had noted, it's kind of funny, I think honestly what had happened is we walked into orientation and we joked about this. I sat down and realized it was almost an entire row of, like, we all knew we were all lesbians. Just sitting there, I'm like, oh yeah, that's our row right here. So it was a few months into the program starting. It was probably towards the end of the fall semester. And she had approached me about the idea of starting an LGBT-focused library group. And at first, I actually had a hard time imagining, like, what would we do? I just couldn't wrap my brain around it at first. And again, I hadn't been thinking about the needs of LGBT patrons. It was completely lost on me. So because I was intrigued, and it would personally, you know, since I identify as a lesbian, I was like, well, sure. I mean, let's talk about it. I have no idea what we're going to do, but let's talk about it. And I really have to give Carrie credit, because I think she had a much clearer idea of, I think because she was thinking more about public libraries, and that was maybe one of the aspects of librarianship that was not on my radar. She had been thinking about the issues that this particular population may face in terms of accessing information or the resources that a public library especially, could provide. And me, Carrie, and Jen, eventually another SLIS student who's currently still in the program, Chris Gladowski, got together and decided, well, why don't we try some basic programming? And it's kind of taken off from there. So we've been around for about 2 years now.
I think I presented.
You did. On an aspect of...
Of the LGBT project.
Yeah.
So, in the few minutes that we have left this time, since we're on the topic of, you know, being in school and being in SLIS, I want to shift back to the classes and the instructors.
Yeah.
So, you weren't quite sure what sort of librarian you wanted to be when you got here. You had some rough ideas.
Yeah.
What classes or what instructors sort of helped to help you focus on what it would mean for you, what your librarianship path would mean or what would lead to?
My approach, and I think I kind of stuck with this throughout the 3 years I've been in the program, was to try to do the opposite of what I did with my undergrad. My undergrad was all theory-based, and honestly, I had fun, but I came out of the program and realized, looking at my resume, that I didn't have a lot of technical skills. So my approach to a lot of picking classes for SLIS was, what am I going to get out of this that I can put on my resume or show an example of a skill that I acquired while I was here? And I wanted to incorporate classes that had a technology component, because I felt like, looking at job descriptions that I was regardless of the type of library it was in, that the ability to pick up whatever technological innovation was the in thing quickly was becoming across the board a fairly important aptitude to have. So that was really kind of my driving, I guess, thought process throughout. But I think the class that was kind of the turning point for where I think I'm going now, which is academic librarianship with the emphasis on, I really enjoy teaching. I'm also interested in research data management, and I feel like I could probably find a position in an academic library where I get to dabble in both, hopefully. But for me, I did the Lilly practicum, and I was completely terrified of it because I had never taught before, though my entire life I've heard people tell me that I should teach, and I had considered it at multiple points in my life, thinking, oh, I'll go get certified or whatever, and I never did it. And I really enjoy it, and I seem to have a skill set towards that. So the Lilly practicum has been a really big aspect of my time here at SLIS, because it solidified for me that academic librarianship is a good place for me to be, and within that context, teaching is a good thing for me to be doing, and I enjoy it.
I think I need to give you space to build out the acronym.
Oh, yes.
Since we don't know who will listen to this in the future, and also give you space to talk a little bit about what that specific practicum means.
Yes.
So.
Okay, Lilly. It is. I'm so used to always saying it, I have to actually think about what it is. Library, Instruction, and Information Literacy Practicum. I think that's what it is. No. It's some combination of that.
So library and literacy are the L's.
Yes.
And instruction and information are the I's.
Yeah.
And then just
put
it together as C's. Yeah. I asked a question that I didn't know the answer to.
I should know the answer, but I'm so used to just saying Lily that.
Right, which that's all I'm used to hearing too. So, all right. So
yes.
We sort of got that.
Yes.
So now what does it mean to do that practicum?
It's a semester-long 120-hour practicum that includes a weekly class that's not counted in that 120 hours. Let's make that really clear. And you are placed with a library on campus. I was placed at Steenbach, which fit me perfectly because Steenbach is the library for the life sciences, and that's my area of subject interest. And between your field placement at the library, so for me at Steenbach, and then also across campus, you end up spending a good chunk of that 120 hours actually in the classroom, either assisting or actually teaching library instruction. So in the course of the time I was there, I taught, I believe it was 15 classes for the Comm A classes here on campus. So like your English 100, Composition 100 type classes. And then out of Steenbach, I assisted with really intense Bio 152 library instruction, which is a 3-hour lab session. That was very intense. And then a bunch of other life sciences courses I helped out with, like Life Sciences Communication 100, I think, and I think some animal science classes. So it was kind of all over the place. And then I prepared for and taught an ESL class with a mentor from college library. And then the final aspect of the practicum was a capstone project. And for me, I looked at the feasibility of inserting a learning assessment piece into the Bio 152 3-hour monster instruction session. Since the librarians at Steenbach spent a lot of time on that class, and they at this point don't really do a true assessment of learning outcomes, and they're really interested in whether or not the 3-hour time period is worth that. Mm-hmm. So I gave a presentation on that.
Okay. One more just
Yeah.
Acronym ESL.
Oh, English as a Second Language.
Which is what I thought it was.
Yes.
But we do live in a world of acronyms. I just wanted to make sure we weren't talking about something completely different. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So, where to go from here? So you talked about the Lilly Practicum. Are there other classes or specific instructors that you feel really provided you some advice and good advice and support or good technical skills that you needed as you're getting ready to move on?
As far as technical skills, Dorothea Sallow's classes, I've walked away from all of them feeling like even if I encounter a technology that I don't know how to use, I feel like I have developed the skill set and maybe more importantly, the aptitude to being able to address that problem, in large part because of her courses.
What are some of the courses that Dorothea taught that you took?
She has a kind of a wide-ranging introduction to technology within libraries called Digital Tools and Trends, which the nice thing about that class is that it put the library context around concepts like Web 2.0 or whatever the case may be, which I was familiar with a lot of the technology and issues about technology that she talked about. What I wasn't familiar with was the library context. So that class was really beneficial at adding that perspective to it and why, as a librarian, I should care about whatever's happening with a particular technological issue or debate. And then I took a database class with her, which just, again, kind of helped with the idea of just, even if I'm not managing a database, it helps with the just understanding the problems and issues and why a database may not work the way you think it should, or I'm trying to think what else I've taken. Those were the two main ones. Oh, I'm actually in one right now. Wow. Last semester. Which is less technology focused and more, it's digital curation, and it's really looking, I'm taking it for my interest in research data management.
All right, so I want to give you some space here to, if there's anything that's on your mind, particularly about your time at SLIS. We're going to do another interview, but I want to make sure if this is sort of the chance that if there's something you've been wanting to say that we're afraid it won't get brought up in the next interview, or even if something that you want me to ask in the next session that you want to make sure I ask. Let's end with that.
Okay.
And there's no right answer to this.
I'm trying to think of, I probably am, maybe in the next interview, wouldn't mind talking a little bit more about the LGBTQ library group.
Okay.
But I really can't think of anything.
Okay. And I want to get this on the record that I want to talk a little bit about the larger Wisconsin.
Oh, yes.
So you know what it means to be a lesbian in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And has it changed for you over the time that you've been here?
Ah. Yes.
So,
okay.
Let's bring it out into a larger context.
Okay.
All right. So this ends the second interview with Lori Steckervetz. Thank you, Lori.
Yep.